first start off with some misnomers. We are not American, as in we are not nationwide, and we're not really a foundation. We are a 501c3, a not-for-profit, who works only in the Kansas City area. We have three locations in the Kansas City area where we work directly with people who have had strokes. Each one of our centers, one in at the Y in Blue Springs, at the Cleaver Y at 70th and Troost, and at the Sylvester Powell Center in Mission, Kansas, have programs that are from about 9 in the morning till 2:30 or 3 in the afternoon that work on some of the issues that stroke survivors have after they finish their rehabilitation or are trying to get back into the swing of life.
So that is definitely a great philosophy to be able to help people get back into the swing of life, because a lot of people think that once you've had a stroke, that life is over. But strokes also can be damaging also to individuals. So what is the mission of the Stroke Foundation? What is the mission of the organization?
Well, the mission of the organization is to help people rebuild hope and reclaim lives after their stroke. And as I said, we do that through programming that works on physical fitness, that works on communication skills, that works on just everyday living skills, and a lot of socialization, because a lot of people after stroke become very isolated. They go home and they sit in front of the TV set and they figure their lives are over even when their lives aren't over. So we provide kind of a waypoint in that. And we feel that being in the community, at a community center where there are people that haven't had strokes, is the best way to help people move away from home. Even though they live there still, that's not a problem.
What is the vision of the Stroke Foundation?
The vision originally, and is very, very, very much of a vision, is for us to go nationwide with our programs, because we know our programs are very beneficial to people, and we think that people need this all over the place. But we also know how expensive it is, and to just start from scratch is very, very difficult. So we're kind of backing off on that vision a little bit and just kind of concentrating on the Kansas City area. So we hope that we can get as many stroke survivors in the Kansas City area back into the community as possible. So hopefully our next location will be in North Kansas City.
So we, the Kansas City metropolitan area, have a great asset and tool in our community that is organized with the Stroke Foundation that other areas of the United States don't have.
Correct. We were started by Shirley Rose, whose husband had a stroke, and she realized after his stroke that there was nothing available in the community or resources for him. And so this was her idea, her and some doctors and people that she got a hold of during that time between her husband's death from stroke and when we opened our first doors in 2000. And she just is a visionary. There's no two ways around it. She's in her middle 90s now, and she's still kicking.
Well, we want to say thank you to Shirley for that, because without her vision, then we would not have the great organization that we have today.
Correct.
When did the Stroke Foundation start? What year was it that they actually started?
Shirley started the venture in 1997, but we didn't open our doors in 2000. And at that point, in 2000, we opened up in a house. Someone purchased a house, I don't know if Shirley did that or not, in Overland Park, and it was called the Stroke House. So there are people in town who still call it the Stroke House. They have to have been around a pretty long time. But the neighbors complained that they didn't want so many people in their neighborhood, you know, decreased property values, all that stuff that goes on. And so I don't know what year it was, but we moved to Tomahawk Ridge Elementary School, and we were there for quite a while, and then we moved to Mission. And we split off. We had a location at in the Swope Ridge Nursing Home and in Mission for quite a while. And then we moved to Blue Springs. We've done a lot of moving.
But you're still around almost 20 years later.
Exactly.
And you're still helping people who have suffered from having a stroke.
Correct.
We use the word stroke, and a lot of people don't know, what is a stroke?
Well, a stroke is like a heart attack in the brain. So there's two different kinds of stroke. The most common kind of stroke is an ischemic stroke, or a stroke that's caused by a clot in the brain. That clot can come from just about anywhere. You think of people who have deep vein thrombosis, like if you ride in an airplane for a long period of time, or from the lungs, or from the heart. And that, like I said, is the most common kind. And then the other kind of stroke is the hemorrhagic stroke, where you have a bleed in your brain, and that's about 10% of people that have had strokes, but it is the most deadliest kind of stroke. It is the most deadliest type of stroke, the hemorrhagic stroke. So when you hear about, and we'll talk about this in a second, I'm sure, when you hear that people have to get to the hospital quickly after they're having symptoms from a stroke, it's to find out if they're having a hemorrhagic stroke or if they're having a thrombotic stroke, because if they're having a thrombotic stroke, then they can use the clot buster medications, if they know what time the stroke started, to break up that clot and get rid of some of the symptoms of the stroke.
My grandmother, who was 83 and still working in her garden, and she would get around. She had stopped smoking. She had a great weight, and she was somebody who taught me a whole lot, and I really miss her. But it was one day she would go outside, and she would try to get out there early. But one day she got out there, and she was hoeing the weeds out of her garden, and she suffered a stroke. And it's one of those things. A lot of people think that strokes just happen to older people. Is that a misnomer?
That's a misnomer. Now, well, okay, I would say probably a majority of strokes happen to older people, but the number of strokes happening to younger people is getting more and more. You hear that that diabetes is rising in the younger people. Well, diabetes is a risk factor for stroke. You hear about the sedentary lifestyle, another risk factor for stroke. You hear about bad diet, another risk factor for stroke. So the risk factors are going down and down. There are some things that you can't change. For example, your grandmother's age. The older we get, the more likely we are to have a stroke. Probably your grandmother's African American. You can't change your race. Well, that's another risk factor that you can't control. But
I know one of the things that when a person has a stroke, what happens to those brain cells?
They die, and they die almost immediately, and you don't get them back. That's why they have the 3.5 to 4.5 hour window for getting the clot busting drug. The faster we can get somebody to the hospital, the faster we can get those brain cells, to keep those brain cells from dying. And so that's why everybody needs to know the signs and symptoms of somebody having a stroke, and needs to get them to the hospital as soon as possible.
So is it possible, once those brain cells have died, to retrain the body to be able to do the things that the body used to do?
Yeah, we call that neuroplasticity. And neuroplasticity is a big word, but what it means is that the nerves that were innervating those areas of the brain, we know this from young people, because young people have a lot of neuroplasticity. So when a young person, like a baby, has a stroke, which babies do have strokes, they don't have the same kinds of problems as adults do. The older we get, the less plastic, if you think about a rubber band. So your new rubber band's all stretchy, and as it gets old, you try to stretch it and it breaks in half. That's kind of what neuroplasticity is. So at when you're young, the nerves that are affecting the brain are young and they're vital and they can move really well. And as you get older, they're less so. But we do know that with therapy, we can help people get better after stroke because we challenge the brain to form new neurons to take over for the parts of the brain that are damaged.
Some stroke statistics for you. Strokes by the numbers. Each year, 800,000 people experience a new or recurring stroke. A stroke happens every 40 seconds. Stroke is the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. Every 4 minutes, somebody dies from a stroke. Up to 80% of strokes can be prevented. And stroke is the leading cause of adult disability in the United States. And if you want some more stroke facts, you can go to www.stroke.org. Understanding a stroke, what stroke, and stroke facts. So we were talking earlier when you came on, before you came on the air, you said the stroke used to be the third leading cause of death, so that means we're making some change. We're gaining ground.
We are gaining ground. People are getting to the hospital quicker. People are hopefully taking care of themselves a little bit better. I think it's more on the drug end of things at this point in time. We got to work on the other stuff a little bit, but I think because we have more things in our arsenal now to help get us through the stroke. So the clot busting drug is one. It's called TPA. And then there is a clot removal mechanism where they can thread this clot removal like basket thing up into the and grab the clot out of your brain, and we can do that here in Kansas City, and then that's another great. I mean, so technology has helped us in that direction. Now we got to help ourselves, and let's make it like the ninth leading cause of death.
We've talked about two of the different types of strokes, the ischemic stroke and the hemorrhagic stroke. But we're hearing a lot in the news about a transient ischemic attack, or a TIA. What is a TIA?
A TIA is like a stroke that happens, but then the symptoms go away. And it's kind of a warning sign for a stroke because it means your brain's all set up to do something major. So it's really important that you get some treatment, whether it be get your high blood pressure under control, take a blood thinner if that's a problem, have them look for atherosclerosis in your brain or in the carotid arteries, or those arteries on your neck where people take pulses from. They can do something called an endarterectomy where they go up and they scrape out those. I know I have such technical terms here. They scrape out those
the vessels.
They scrape out the vessels and they scrape out the hardness that's on those vessels.
The calcification.
I always think of this as kind of like a drain pipe. Like those vessels are like a drain pipe, and they get really clogged with grease and hair and crap. They don't really get. Sorry about that, my language. They don't get clogged with grease and hair, but it's the same thing. And it's small, and that makes the artery harder for the blood to pump through. And then if a clot does bust off, there's a lot less space for that clot to move through. So it tends to get stuck there. So.
Okay. So are there signs for that a person may be having a transient ischemic attack?
It's going to be the same signs as stroke. So we use the term fast. And so if somebody's having a TIA, and it may go away in a matter of seconds, and then you don't even notice, or it may take up to 24 hours for it to go away. But they're going to have some of the same symptoms. So if you think of an acronym FAST, you're going to look at their face. Do they have a facial droop on one side of their face? A stands for arm. Is their arm strength the same on both sides? Because a stroke affects one side of the body. The reason it is a stroke affects one side of the body, well, except hemorrhagic strokes. We'll get to that later. The reason it affects one side of the body is that it's on one side of the brain. And one side of your brain controls the opposite side of your body. So if the stroke is on the left side of your brain, it controls the right side of your body. So if you ask the person to lift up their arms and they can lift it up, but they can't keep one of them up, or you lift them up and they can't keep one of their arms up, that's a symptom. And the last thing in this anachronism is speech, which I seem to be having trouble with sometimes. And that is, does the person sound odd? Is he saying odd things? Is he kind of maybe babbling? That's a symptom. And then the last one is time, and that's what I've been talking about, need to get to the hospital immediately. So sometimes people are getting to the hospital, and they're in the midst of a TIA. And at that time, you would much rather be safe than sorry.
That's a good point. If you have any questions for Kathy, our expert today from the American Stroke Foundation, please give a call on the studio line, 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. So we talked about FAST, those things. Are there any other warning signs that people may need to know about that, you know, can be indicator of having a stroke?
You can have a stroke that affects your eyes first. I've run into several people who their stroke has affected their eyes. So that's one of the warning signs. Are you seeing kind of weird, like maybe not out of one eye? Or maybe I had a friend who had a stroke like this, and of course she ran to her eye doctor, and of course that makes an eye doctor freak out, because here he has this person in his office or her office, and he knows that person's having a stroke, and so he needs to call an ambulance. So that's one. The other is a really terrible headache, like the worst headache you've ever had in your life. Generally, stroke doesn't come with a headache, but a hemorrhagic stroke does come with a headache.
Okay. I know also some of the things that I looked up was sudden numbness and weakness, and you said in the face, the arm, the leg, especially on one side of the body. Sudden confusion, trouble speaking or understanding, sudden trouble seeing in one or both eyes, sudden trouble walking, dizziness, loss of balance or coordination, and as you said, lastly, sudden severe headache with no known cause. So it's going to be a headache that's going to be way different than a migraine headache.
Right, right.
So what are some of the risk factors for stroke that we can control to help?
Okay, well, I think we're all getting kind of inundated with these risk factors through. They help for cancer, they help for stroke, they help for heart disease, they help for everything. And so those first one is going to be eating a healthy diet. Whole foods, not processed foods, fruits, vegetables, low fat meats, and that kind of stuff. The second one is exercise and keeping your weight under control. So making sure that you're not, you look at the BMI categories and you go, mine's starting to move into that obesity range. And that happens at fairly low weights. So you need to be cognizant of that. And then physical activity, getting that 150 minutes a week of pretty hard-pressed exercise.
So are there, do strokes affect more men or more women? I know it used to be like heart disease, it was something that strictly was only for men, but now women are catching up. So is it equal, or do men have more, or do women have more?
Actually, men have more, but women live longer. So that makes the number of people who have strokes more towards the women's side, because let's say that, and I don't know the real facts here, the average length of life for a man is 75 and for a woman is 80. Well, in those 5 years, a lot of those women would have strokes that the men won't have because they're not even here anymore. So there are more women who have strokes, but really there are more men statistically.
So are some races more prone to have strokes than other races? Or is it, you know, do the risk factors, how does that particularly work out, being African American being versus Caucasian, being Latino versus being Asian?
I actually don't know the Asian statistics. African American, because people who are African American are more prone to high blood pressure, that makes them more prone to stroke. Latino is they have the same kind of risk for high blood pressure. The problem too is in this country they get a less health care, which doesn't help in respect to any kind of chronic disease process they have going on.
So as we as a nation become more obese, more overweight, are we going to be looking at a situation where we will now have more people will start to suffer strokes? That, as we found out, up to 80% of strokes are preventable, so that stroke could be prevented just by getting 150 minutes a week, being able to eat less fatty meats and more lean meats, and then being able to just ensure that you're taking your medications and doing the things that you need to do.
Correct.
So what should a person do if they're having a stroke or they feel that one of their loved ones is having a stroke?
Okay. Once you recognize that someone has a stroke, one of the first things that some people may tell you is, no, I'm not having a stroke, just let me go lay down and take a nap. Please don't do that. And I know that's like the hardest thing in the world, but you need to force them to go to the hospital, and we need to force them to go in an ambulance. The reason being that in the ambulance, they can set up what needs to happen in the hospital. So the ambulance will, you know, talk to the hospital. They will triage the person, figure out, oh, we think their person is having a stroke. So then the CT scan is clear. They might be able to set up for the TPA administration. So it's just better to go in an ambulance. And I know a lot of people think, well, I can get to the hospital faster in my car. And you might be able to get to the hospital faster, but then the hospital has to process you and find out what's going on. Whereas if you call an ambulance, the ambulance can start processing you probably in your home, and then you get to the hospital and they're all ready for you.
So the trained medical personnel that you can call are going to do more good for you than the time that you're going to cut off getting to the hospital. And then they will set you up for greater success if you are having a stroke or if you're in the process of getting ready to, you've had a stroke, which would, all of that's like the golden hour, like when somebody has a car accident that you've got an hour to get to the hospital. So those golden minutes can help based on, they can help either reduce after having a stroke, or if you've had a stroke, set you up to have a greater recovery because of the things that the paramedics are going to do.
Correct.
Why is it important if a person is having symptoms that they note the time the symptoms started for the doctors?
Well, I think you've heard me say, and maybe it's less understandable until you get to this question, why do you have to get to the hospital within 3.5 to 4.5 hours? Well, and it doesn't have to be between 3.5 to 4.5 hours, but up to is because that's the only time they can administer TPA. They know that it used to be 3.5 hours, so let's use that. After 3.5 hours, it's not as effective as it is before 3.5 hours, and it's kind of expensive. Well, that's not a good reason not to give somebody something, but they know that it's not going to help you after that 3.5, and now they've extended that a little bit to 4.5 hours, so between 3.5 to 4.5 hours. So it's very important for the person, for somebody to note the last time you knew that person was well, that he or she wasn't suffering from a stroke. So, well, I know I saw Bill at breakfast, and Bill was fine at breakfast. So that was at 8 o'clock. And now it's 10:30, and he's sitting in his chair slumped over. Well, now I know for sure from 8:30 to 10:30, that was when the stroke happened, and so we have time to get him to the hospital. But that doesn't mean don't get him to the hospital. If you know it's been longer than that, please don't. That isn't the message here, because there's also that clot capturing device that they can use. And I think it's more like a claw thing. It's like those, you know how you get those toys out of the machine at like Cracker Barrel or something? It's more like that, where they can run that into the artery and grab that clot out of it.
So how can having a stroke impact our body?
Well, we already talked about some of those symptoms that happen afterwards. So one of the first things is that it would affect you motorically. The motor side of your body is not going to work very well. So let's say your stroke's on the left side, then your right side, your right arm, your right leg, your right trunk muscles aren't working as well. So it makes it hard to do things one-handed. Usually people will come back to walking a lot better than they'll come back to using both hands, but that's certainly what we in therapy kind of strive for, is to get the person to use their what we call affected arm. They might have, if the stroke was in the left side of their brain, they may have speech and language problems called aphasia or dysarthria. Dysarthria is a motor problem, which means the muscles aren't working properly. If you think about how we speak, everything is about muscles. If we can't move our muscles in the right way, our speech isn't going to come out correctly. So and aphasia is a little bit differently. It's an inability to create language. It's about language. It's something that you probably have never run across, but there's some really good information at aphasia.org, and aphasia is A-P-H-A-S-I-A. So if you know somebody who has a stroke and they just really can't get words out properly, you might go on that website and it will explain that for you. So the other side of the brain that's not doing the language part is doing the artistic and what we call the perceptual part of the brain. So that's the part of the brain that helps you know that your shirt is inside out or backwards or forwards. And it's the hardest thing to explain to people, because the person who has a stroke on the right side of the brain can talk really well, so that isn't a problem. And we expect people who can talk really well to be able to do other things. Well, that's not always the case. So what we do a lot of training as occupational therapists in helping people to do the everyday things like brush their teeth and get dressed and take a shower. Not in that order, probably, but because they do have problems with that. There's also something called left neglect, and left neglect is a sensory disorder where one side of the world just goes away for that person. So if you're eating food on a plate, they'll eat all the food on the right side of the plate, but they won't eat the food on the left side of the plate because it's gone. It's not there. If you turn the plate around, then they'll eat it because now it's on the right side. And some people with really bad strokes, that lasts for a very long time. Other people, that gets better as the recovery occurs.
Okay. So this is Cowtown Conversations. I'm your host, Joseph Jackson. Our guest today is Kathy Parker from the American Stroke Foundation, and we're talking about strokes. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this short break. And we're back. This is Joseph Jackson, and our conversation today is with Kathy Parker from the American Stroke Foundation. So, Kathy, what steps can people take if they've unfortunately had a stroke to help them regain some of those motor symptoms and improve their health?
Well, for the most part, it's all going to kind of take place in a medical arena. You're usually in maybe ICU for a while, maybe in a bed in neurology for a while, and then you're transferred to the rehabilitation unit. And in the rehabilitation unit, they work on things like strengthening your arm and helping you get dressed and all that kind of stuff. And then you may do some outpatient therapy, or you may have some therapy come into your home, or maybe some of those things happen in different orders. If you're not ready for rehab yet, they may send you home with some home health, and then you go into rehab. And that's the end of it for a lot of people. If they don't know about the American Stroke Foundation, we have a hard time with our PR because nobody really listens about it unless there's a reason for people to listen. People always say to me, well, I've never heard of you. And I'm like, well, because you don't process things that don't have an effect on you. And so we offer something that is not offered otherwise. Medicare has some pretty strict guidelines, and they don't allow very much rehab anymore. I used to be back in the day before a lot of regulations. Medicare was more lenient than it is now, but they have an average of 17 days for rehab after a stroke on Medicare.
That is not a lot of time for somebody who just went through a life-changing event that's going to have their life permanently changed to be able to get things done. The American Stroke Foundation has an event coming up, 2018. It's called the 2018 Stroke Walk. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The Stroke Walk is on September the 8th. I keep getting it messed up with the 9th, but it's September the 8th. It's at Tice Park, and Tice Park is that park that's between the shuttlecock and UMKC with Kauffman Gardens to the east. We have a 3-mile walk and a short walk that most of the survivors take. That's about a half a mile. We have a great band called Harvest Moon. They are awesome. We have a lot of vendors who come to display their wares. We have a breakfast that comes complimentary. And then we just have a great time. We have a kids area. This year we have a super exciting addition to the walk, and that is something called the Mega Brain. I don't know if anyone's seen the Mega Brain. I've only seen it one time, but it is a huge inflatable brain that is 12 feet tall and is, I don't know, so like 19 feet long and 14 feet wide. And so you can walk through the brain or roll through the brain, and you can see all the different structures of the brain, and it has what a stroke looks like from inside the brain. So that's very exciting.
We've got a caller. Caller Joanne, can you tell us what part of town you're calling from and what your question is for Kathy?
Yes, South Kansas City. Which side of the brain affects memory?
Memory is kind of on both sides of the brain. And so generally a stroke doesn't just affect memory. That would be part of a whole conglomeration of other things. And most people that have stroke don't have particular memory problems unless they have strokes in multiple areas of the brain.
My sister-in-law had, clot on just one clot. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't remember. She remembers my brother, but not as her husband.
Well, I do not know the answer to that question.
Okay.
Sorry.
Let's see, because I had my radio turned down, when is this park event where you can walk in the brain?
It's on September the 8th.
Oh, okay.
Which is a Saturday. The Saturday after Labor Day.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have to make a short announcement. The Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin, has passed away. So the world has lost a great voice with her passing. So she was so instrumental in artists such as Whitney Houston, you know, Beyonce and Jay-Z dedicated some of their tour to her, so she will definitely be missed. So Aretha Franklin has passed away. So as we were talking about the stroke walk, the Theus Park is located, as you said, the address for it is at Oak and 47th Street, and as you said, it's straight across from the Nelson Atkins Museum. So what time does the stroke walk begin on that Saturday?
The stroke walk begins with breakfast at about between 8 and 8:30, and then the walk starts at 9:30.
Okay. And you've got registration starts at 8, you said, you have here listed, and T-shirt pickup, continental breakfast, music, and vendor booths open at 8:30. 9:30 at the opening ceremonies, 9:45 is the stroke walk time. And you said there are going to be two routes. There's going to be one route that's a half a mile on paved pathways, and then a 2.5 mile walk through Theus Park and along Brush Creek.
It's actually, and that's on paved parkways too, because we don't really walk in Tice Park. Just don't get me started on if it's raining. So we walk down in Brush Creek. There's a nice trail that goes around down to the plaza. You go over the creek, back over the creek, and it's very nice. It is a little up and down, so it's a little hard to push wheelchairs, but it's a good walking trail, and it's very pretty.
We have a caller, Kurt, calling from the east side. Kurt, what's your question or comment for Kathy Parker?
I was wondering if restraining the voluntarily restraining the unaffected arm is still controversial in recovering. You said that you can usually get people to often can get people to walk to use the affected leg, but some people don't really think that they can move get the arm going. And from my research, looking things up, that they're having a lot of success if get people to voluntarily restrain their good hand, and it is a struggle and it's very frustrating, but we're learning that there is so much more plasticity than they ever had. The old thinking was adults had no plasticity. We know that's not true now. It seems like it's such an upward hill battle to get people to voluntarily restrain their good arm so that they get full recovery in their affected arm. Thank you.
Thank you, Kurt. So, go ahead, Kathy.
So that's very true. And if you can think about it, if your good arm is restrained and your affected arm doesn't work that well, it's going to be a big uphill battle for anybody to voluntarily restrain their arm. So I think it's controversial because I don't think very many people can follow the protocol for very long. So that is the problem. But yes, they have found there's much more plasticity than they ever thought. I mean, at the beginning when I was, we call it a baby therapist, they always told us, what you get in the first 2 months is good enough, or is all you're going to get, and now they've changed that to 6 months, and what we know from the Stroke Foundation is it's way longer than that. And it takes a long time to adapt to being in the condition that you're in. So that is another reason that we are around.
So as we begin to talk about the stroke walk, they're going to have the two pay things. Are there going to be any other types of events that's going to be out there for a family? This is a family event, so
correct.
Everybody can come.
Everybody can come, absolutely. For the kids, we have we draw on the sidewalks with chalk. We have face painting. We have a washer toss. We're hoping to find a cornhole toss. I'm hoping, too, that Kansas City fire truck can come. Last year we had a surprise visit from a fire truck, and I think we maybe have an in with the fire people to have that happen again this year. And so, yeah, there's so much going on, and then there's the walk.
Okay. The American Stroke Foundation has a goal of $70,000 for the event, and you're about a third of the way to the goal. How will those funds be used?
Well, we are totally funded by donations. Our major chunk of our money comes from the United Way. We're a United Way agency. Our stroke survivors do pay a nominal amount every month, so that's about 12% of our budget. So the rest of it we have to raise for, you know, with fundraising. So a lot of that goes to things like the rent, to salaries, to equipment that we need, that is basically what our budget is. It's all about our programming. So 90 to 100% of your donations go to our program.
How can people register for the 2018 Stroke Walk?
If you go to AmericanStroke.org, so it's AmericanStroke, all one word, .org, you will see on our homepage a button that says register for the walk, and you go there and you can register. If you want to walk, you want to register. If you don't want to walk, you just want to make a donation, you can do that. It's just a great, fun event. And every year we have, you know, what's the weather going to be like this year? We've had it. Same weekend, we've had cold weather, we've had hot weather, we've had rainy weather, we've had all kinds of weather. So we come equipped with, there will be stations with water and nurses doing first aid along the long route and on the short walk too. And that is how we roll.
So, are you still looking for people to sponsor the Stroke Walk? Are there still opportunities for sponsorship from companies or from individuals if they want to have a team?
Always. There's always. Now, if you want to get your name on a T-shirt and you want to sponsor the Stroke Walk, you can go to that same button on the homepage at AmericanStroke.org, and I think there's a button there for sponsorship. And say you want to sponsor, and at certain levels, you get your logo on the T-shirt, or you get your name on the T-shirt. And I should have brought a T-shirt for you today. I think we have some left over. Okay. Just a few. But we need those logos by Friday, so.
Okay, so it means they haven't printed this year's shirts. They're in design. So if you're looking at an opportunity to support a great organization, here's a great cause.
Absolutely.
So the work the American Stroke Foundation does would not be possible without some very important people, your volunteers. How can people that may not have money but have time volunteer with the American Stroke Foundation?
We have volunteers that volunteer with our stroke survivors doing different classes. We have, actually, our program is run by occupational therapists, but mostly it's run by occupational therapy students. And so we can have volunteers who come and volunteer to work during classes with the students, to work upstairs in the gym supervising people. We have an aquatics class at all our locations that happens a couple days a week. If you like getting in the pool, you can get in the pool with our survivors. And, you know, some people need a little help with their balance. The water helps a lot, but we need people to help doing that too. And then we also need some help in the office sometimes, entering data, doing things like that, stuffing envelopes, all the usual charitable things that charities have to do. Like, we'll have some thank you notes to stuff after this event, I hope.
So if somebody suffered a stroke, how can that loved one or family member contact the American Stroke Foundation to get help with resources and support during this trying time?
Okay. We actually have two programs. We have our Next Step program, which is what I've been talking about the most. We also have a Stroke Navigator program that helps people find more resources within the community and figuring out how to support people who have had strokes within the community. Both of those programs can be found on our website or by calling 913-649-1776.
Okay, and for those that are inquiring about those next step classes, Kansas at the Sylvester Powell Community Center, 6200 Mart Way, Mission, Kansas. That number is 913-649-1776. In Kansas City, you have the Cleaver Family YMCA, 700 Troost Avenue, Kansas City, Missouri. And that number again is 913-649-1776. And in Blue Springs, you have the Blue Springs YMCA at 1300 Southeast Adams Dairy Parkway. The number again is 913-649-1776. So what is the website for the American Stroke Foundation?
It's AmericanStroke, like I said, all one word, .org.
So that is AmericanStroke, AmericanStroke.org, and /about-us. So if you, that's the website, you can get more information about the 2018 Stroke Walk, about vendor possibilities, vendor opportunities, about, you know, resources to help you. And if you want to learn more about strokes, you can go to www.stroke.org/featured-faces-of-stroke. So as we start to wind down, do you have any last-minute questions or comments? How many people do you have right now registered for the Stroke Walk?
I do not know the answer to that, but I can tell you how many we're expecting.
How many did you have last year?
We had about 600 people last year. Actually, about 100 of those are volunteers. So we had about 500 people walking. And I expect more. We are about 30 people donation-wise ahead of last year as of our meeting on Monday night. So that's really exciting.
Yes. So what is the cost for to participate in the Stroke Walk? Is it? Go ahead.
It's $25. And for that, you get a T-shirt, breakfast, get to listen to music, go to events, that kind of stuff, walk.
So it's a great opportunity to get some exercise, to get a healthy breakfast, to get a shirt to come out there. And I know the shirts will probably be available in all different sizes. So
absolutely.
It's a great opportunity to help a great organization in the metropolitan area that nobody else has.
Exactly.
So if you can give the number for the American Stroke Foundation one more time if somebody wants to contact you.
Okay, it's 913-649-1776.
So that's American Stroke Foundation. I would like to thank Kathy for being our guest today. We never end Cowtown Conversations without our Community Minute. We've got a few this week. Emmanuel's Family and Child Development Center, located at 3510 Prospect Avenue, will be hosting a back-to-school bash on Saturday, August 18th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mothers in Charge will be hosting a Mother's Night Out on Thursday, August 23rd at the East Patrol Station in the community room from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. This event is open to all women, not just mothers. We've had over 70 murders in Kansas City this year, and it's just August. We must stop the murders and killing, and it will take all of us working together to end the violence. If you would like more information, please call Jennifer Alexander at Mothers in Charge at 816-912-2601. The City of Kansas City is starting its budget sessions, and they are asking residents of Kansas City by asking them to participate in a work session to provide input that will help to shape the city's priorities and objectives for the upcoming budget, 2019 budget year. In addition to participating in a focus group on a goal area of your choice, you will engage in Pick Your Priorities game, which will identify the preferences on how to spend city's limited funding. All of this input will be considered by the City Council as they finalize the 5-year citywide business plan and set the next annual budget. The first meeting is going to be in the Central Zone, which is going to be Thursday, August 23rd from noon to 2 p.m. at the Liberty Memorial, 2 Memorial Drive. They're going to have a light lunch. The second one will be South Kansas City, Saturday, August 25th from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. at the Southeast Community Center, 4201 East 63rd Street. They're going to have a continental breakfast. And the last meeting will be the North meeting, Tuesday, August 28th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Briarcliff Church, 800 Northeast Vivian Road. They're going to have a light dinner. To reserve a spot, call Alyssa Denberg at 816-513-1173. Or you can email her at alyssa.dinberg@kcmo.org. Heartland Community Forum will be hosted by KKFI and Cowtown Conversations here at the station next Thursday, August 23rd from 2 to 4 p.m. If you're a community organizer or involved in the community, come out and network and meet others. So next Thursday, August 23rd at KKFI Studios, 3901 Main, and the Heartland Community Forum will be from 2 to 4 p.m. We're going to start a new series, and I'm really excited about it. August the 30th, we're going to start a series called Wills, Life Insurance, Funerals, and Trust. There is a lot of information out there. If you die without a will, you die intestate. But there are ways to transfer a home. You can transfer your car, your bank accounts that don't involve you having a will. You know, we're going to find out what the purpose of life insurance is. We're going to have experts. The first week for our will sessions, we're going to have two lawyers, one from the Jackson County Bar Association, and they're going to talk strictly about wills. We're going to have another one from Legal Aid that's going to talk just about beneficiary deeds and how you can do a beneficiary deed for very little money. So in case of when that loved one makes that transition, that you don't have to worry about the house, the car, the bank account, all those different things. So tune in. It's going to start August the 30th. So we're going to have experts for every week. And our first 2 weeks are going to be wills and life insurance. So tell your friends, tell your family members to tune in to Cowtown Conversations, and they can call in and give their questions. So join us next week for another episode of Cowtown Conversation. Our guest will be Literacy KC. For Cowtown Conversation, it's been my pleasure today to have you, and have a great day, and stay tuned for My Place with Larry J.
Mm-hmm.